Hello, everyone, and welcome. My name is Lear. I'm a librarian at Teenscape. Welcome to our next installment of Career Conversations. Just a few housekeeping rules. Please silence your cell phones. I will double check myself. Bathroom locations are right out downstairs. We're kind of above the bathrooms. And this is our second career conversation that will be recorded for our podcast. So thank you, Tina, for being here. So your voice will be recorded if you ask a question, but we're not taking video. So thank you so much. I would love to introduce Ms. Bean. She works at she's a missions operation engineer at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, plus more. And I'm very excited to ask her all these questions about science. Welcome, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So we're just gonna start. This is a very relaxed kind of a career conversation. So if you have a question while we're talking, just kind of raise your hand and we'll ask it next instead of what I have here. Sound good? Awesome. All right, so if you wouldn't mind, we also have Ms. Bean brought an awesome slideshow, and just let me know when you want me to move any of it. And the first one, would you describe what you do and the many hats you've worn?
So I have about 7 jobs at JPL right now. I started there about 4.5 years ago. And so my coolest job that I'm about to start training for is actually to become a Mars rover driver. We call them rover planners because not only do they drive the rover, they also operate the robotic arm. So I'm formally starting training for that in a few weeks. My first shift is February 5th, so it's coming up here. And up until then, I've actually been working on the Spirit and Opportunity Mars rovers for on and off about 10 or 11 years now. And I started out as a student on the science team, working with the cameras. And when I got hired at JPL, I had to stop working on them for a little while. And then I came back, and I'm what's called a Tactical Activity Planner Sequence Integration Engineer, TAPSE. You know, we love acronyms here at NASA. And that eventually migrated to being what's called a Tactical Uplink Lead, or TUL. And the TULs are the people in charge of the rover on a day-to-day basis. So when I come in, I'm in charge of the whole team, and I kind of come up with the basic structure of the plan of we're going to drive for an hour, then take pictures for 30 minutes, and we're going to talk to the orbiters, and then take a nap, or something like that. And my favorite part of that job is at the end of the day, I get to sign the sheet of paper that says you have permission to sign, you know, send this plan to Mars. So it's kind of cool to be responsible for a Mars rover. The other mission I work on right now is called Dawn, which is in our main asteroid belt orbiting the dwarf planet Ceres. And I like to call it NASA's TIE fighter because it has ion engines. If you don't know, TIE fighter stands for twin ion engine. And so we actually have 3, so we're kind of a tri-fighter. But we've been orbiting around, taking pictures, getting lots of information in the asteroid belt. And those are kind of the 2 main missions I work on right now. While I was a student, I worked on a couple other missions like the Phoenix Mars Lander, the Hubble Space Telescope, a couple others as well. So it's fun.
So in terms of schooling, what do you recommend for teens and young adults and even people returning to schooling?
Yeah. So I would definitely say follow what you find interesting. When I worked on the Hubble Space Telescope, I found that I didn't really like astronomy as a career path, like actually doing the analysis on the images and that sort of thing. I didn't really like that. I still love bringing out my telescope and looking at the stars, but as a career path, I found I didn't enjoy it. You know, anything can help out the space program. Most recently, my boss was actually a biomedical engineer, and she's now applying that towards robotic arms on spacecraft. And at JPL, not only do we have, you know, scientists and engineers, but we have a whole artist lab. They kind of combine science and technology and art, and they have a lot of really cool installations. We also, you know, have lawyers and all sorts of other career paths, including librarians. You know, you don't have to be, you know, super math genius to work for NASA. So that's my advice, is follow what you find interesting, and eventually it'll lead you to the right spot.
Great. And in terms of that, and the different paths one can take, are there internships or specialized training that people can try to get to? Is there volunteerships, or is it like high school internships, college internships, etc.?
Yeah, so NASA's pretty good about having interns. There's several NASA centers all across the U.S. In Los Angeles proper, there's the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. If you feel like going just to the other side of the mountains, there's Armstrong. And we hire hundreds of students every summer, both at the high school and college level, to come help out. And you can build hardware, or you can write code, or all sorts of things. So if you're really interested, I think internships are really the best way to kind of find out what you like, because it's a short time commitment. And so you can find out very quickly if you don't like that particular field, and then the next summer try again with something else.
Excellent. Thank you. Any questions so far? Should I continue?
Yes. Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about your educational background and how you entered this field?
Yeah, sure. So at that point, I think can we jump to the slides real quick? Because it'll kind of show. So I always kind of had a passion for weather. Like, I grew up mostly in Texas, so severe thunderstorms are pretty common. And it wasn't until mid-high school that I actually got interested in space. So the picture I'm showing right here is a picture my mom took of me looking at a space shuttle launch. And we were so far away, you could barely see it. So I kind of circled it, and even then, it's kind of hard to tell. But I happened to see STS-114, which was the return to flight after the Columbia disaster. And I thought that was super cool and was really interested in it. To go to the next slide, I then spent the subsequent two summers at Space Camp in Huntsville, Alabama, wanting to know everything about space and totally geeking out. And if you click next. So at that point, I didn't really know what I wanted to do because I had this newfound love of space, but I had always loved meteorology. And I finally decided I'll just go to school for meteorology and I'll figure out something for grad school. And since I was in Texas at the time, the only public school that has a meteorology program is Texas A&M. So that's where I went. And one of the orientations, I was wearing a NASA hoodie, and one of the professors said, "Hey, are you interested in space?" And I said, "Yeah, you know, space is really cool. I love it." And she said, "Well, you should go talk to this Dr. Mark Lemon guy. I don't know what he does, but it's space stuff and it's cool." So I went home and looked at his profile, and he's been working on NASA missions since Galileo, and he's worked on all the Mars rovers, and he studies the weather on Mars. And I was like, "That's it, the weather on Mars." So I like in particular showing this collection of photos. So up on the top, you can see me graduating from high school. That was May 25th, 2007. On the bottom left, you can see my advisor, Dr. Lemon, and I. That was on the Phoenix Mars Lander, which landed on Mars May 25th, 2008. It was exactly 1 year to the day from when I graduated high school. I was in mission control as the images are coming down from Mars, and I was the person responsible putting them up onto the screen for the rest of the scientists to look at. So I kind of have to say that was a bit surreal. And so the photo on the right was us again. This is at JPL when I was still a student. And we were both working on the Curiosity Mars rover. And at that point, we both on Phoenix and Curiosity, we worked on Mars time. So a Mars day is about 40 minutes longer than an Earth day. So your schedule's constantly going around the clock. So you're kind of trapped with the couple hundred, you know, scientists and engineers for a couple months, for the first couple months of a mission. And it's quite fun. So I just kind of wanted to show the progression over time. I click next. So my very first research project while I was an undergrad was actually studying data from the Spirit Mars rover. Unfortunately, she got stuck and we stopped talking to her in 2010, but her sister is still going and in fact turns 14 next week. And Sol 5000, the 5000th day of the mission is February 15th, we're planning it, and 16th the data comes down. And that's just fantastic for a mission that was only supposed to last 90 days. So we're kind of outliving our life here. And you can click next. So here's some photos of when I was at the Phoenix test bed. So occasionally, we do different things in our test bed because on Mars, it's obviously harder to get to and harder to fix if we break something. So when we're doing something new, we always test it here on Earth first as best as we can. So that was really fun. I worked on the camera team and took lots of the pretty photos that you see on Mars from that mission. So that was pretty fun. So here's some photos from that landing night on Phoenix. You can see all the different photos as I was putting them down. You can't really see where I'm sitting on the computer there. But my mother said it was really surreal watching NASA TV and seeing my face, because the camera, of course, wanted to hover right over the person that was, you know, popping up the images. And she just thought it was really weird. So I do like hugging rovers, as you've probably figured out by now. So this was on one of my very first visits to JPL, and decided to give a hug to Curiosity. You can also see that they've gotten bigger over time. So this one's, you know, the size of a car, and the previous one's about the size of like a golf cart maybe. And before that it was shoebox size. So we're kind of exponentially growing in size. The next rover is actually going to be a duplicate of Curiosity. You can go ahead and click next. So I talked a little bit about Mars time already. So it's really fun because you start out, you know, one day your shift is at 8 a.m. and the next day it's 8:40 and the next day it's 9:20 and eventually you're coming in at 3 in the morning. And what's fun is, since you're trapped with all these people, you know, first you learn where the 24-hour restaurants are. Second, you start to have, you know, parties and barbecues. So I distinctly remember one time we were having a barbecue at about 5 or 6 in the morning because it was the end of our day outside in a neighbor's yard. And all the people are coming out, you know, on their way to work, and they're just staring at us like, what are you doing? So that was pretty fun. Go ahead. I also like showing off the girl power of the missions, especially in spacecraft operations. It's actually pretty gender balanced. I have yet to figure out exactly what it is that has caused it to be so gender balanced. The group I'm in at JPL called Science Planning is actually more women than men. And I don't know what it is in particular, but it's really fun, and it's kind of refreshing. You know, everyone is talking about, even at JPL and the other groups at JPL, that there's so much, you know, dominated by men. There's, or like, one girl will be the only one in that group. Also, most of my bosses on both sides are women as well, most of the way up the management chain. So I find that kind of refreshing and exciting that, you know, we're heading towards gender equality. Go ahead. So now at JPL, so I talked a little bit about the Dawn mission. And so you can see kind of the spacecraft in the background there. And it's a fairly simplistic spacecraft. We mostly have a camera, a spectrometer of two different types. And then we can use the spacecraft itself for what's called gravity science, understanding the internal gravity structure. And I've been on that since I started at JPL in August of 2013. And I started before we arrived at Ceres, the dwarf planet, and then I've been there since then. And the mission is coming up to its end. We're about to run out of the fuel that we use to turn the spacecraft. So probably by the end of the year, we'll run out. So right now, we're kind of designing our cool end-of-mission plans, which is going to put us into an elliptical orbit. So some parts will be very close to the surface. We haven't quite finalized the data and the orbit that we're going to use that, but we're going to be very, very close to the surface, somewhere between 25 and 100 kilometers. Which is pretty close. Our lowest orbit so far was at 375 kilometers, which is actually closer to Earth than the International Space Station is to Earth. So we'll be getting nice and close. I suppose I could talk about a little bit about the R2UC there. So that was actually a friend of mine's. One of my side hobbies is actually R2-D2 building. I'll have a lot more pictures of it, but you'll see a lot of pictures of me wearing R2-D2 themed clothing and such. Go ahead. So also wanted to show off this photo. Dawn recently won an award, and they flew most of the team to Washington. It was awarded by the Smithsonian, and so they flew most of the team. We had this fancy gala, and I just wanted to show off some of the girl power on Dawn as well. So those are a mix of systems engineers, sequencing people, and our media relations person as well. Go ahead. So now I'm working on the opportunity mission most of the time. You can see on the left, that's me in our test bed. We were testing out some new different ways to drive the rover. And then I also like to dress up as Rey. I'm really obsessed with Star Wars, especially Rey. So it's pretty common that I go to work dressed as Rey. And so you can see there, and you can see the little plaque that Opportunity has there. Not too long ago, she actually crossed over driving a marathon's distance on Mars. So we actually had a marathon at JPL to celebrate that. So of course she had to get the first placard for winning the race first. Go ahead. So here's some more photos of my R2-D2 building. I do occasionally take them to JPL, and I've gotten some help on the side from JPLers when there was mechanical stuff that I didn't quite understand. But I wanted to show off some of the photos of me building it as well, that this is an accessible hobby if you are so inclined and such a Star Wars fan. And I've gotten some help from, especially being in LA, there's the whole prop builder side, entertainment industry. So I've been able to get some help there for the stuff that I just didn't have the equipment access to or something like that. But I've tried to do most of it myself with my husband. Go ahead. And going along with Rey, I'm also a member of the Rebel Legion, and so I dress up as Rey and go to different events like libraries, schools, nonprofit organizations, that sort of thing, and dress up as Rey to entertain kids. And for all the work I did this past year, I actually got invited to go to the world premiere of The Last Jedi. So the photo there is me meeting Daisy Ridley, which was like the highlight of my life. So I think that's all I had on the slideshow. So that hopefully gave you an idea of a little bit of my career path and hobbies. So here's kind of a list of ways that you can keep in touch with NASA. Just about every mission has their own Twitter account that keeps you up to date on what we're doing. My personal account is Planetary Carrie, and there's some websites here as well to keep up to date with what our missions are doing. So.
And you are very active on social media.
Yes.
And as someone who is working in the field, what platforms are helpful, and what do you recommend people, kind of know about?
So I'm mostly active on Facebook and Twitter, and I actually do help with some of the social media for NASA as well. And I actually started that way back with the Phoenix mission. That's when Twitter was kind of getting started, and Facebook pages weren't even a thing yet. And so I was able to kind of help guide NASA and write some of the original rules and help other missions learn how to use social media to reach out to people. And so I've always found kind of a connection to Twitter, because that was kind of the first ones I really got attached to. And so what I've been doing is kind of posting what my life is like at JPL, because I know that not everyone can do what I do. There just aren't enough jobs in that field. And so I try to do follow along, so other people can feel like they're walking along in my shoes as well. And I've met some really amazing people. The vast majority of my friends I met through Twitter at JPL before I actually got hired at JPL. So I found it to be a really unique platform that I enjoy.
Any questions?
Do you do your own sheet metal work?
I do not do my own sheet metal work. I do some of the cutting, but like the actual like shaping of R2's dome and that sort of thing, I just didn't have access to the equipment for. But like cutting out the panels and everything, using a Dremel to cut all of that out, we did ourselves. So, yeah.
Was there a particular path in high school, particular classes that that you took to prepare for a career in science?
So luckily I went to a high school that had a lot of dual credit programs where you take the high school class and then a local community college also awards you the equivalent degree credits. And I also took some classes remote online through Texas Tech. And I also took some of the AP classes as well. And so I kind of was motivated. When I got to college, I wanted to spend the time on the meteorology classes and the classes more relevant to my major. So I tried to get a lot of the English and history and stuff that I wasn't interested in taking yet another time out of the way. So I actually graduated with 36 credit hours, which is equivalent to a whole year of college. So If you have access to that in your schools, I definitely recommend it. There's a lot of good online programs now as well that you can take, and it's a bit cheaper than actually taking a college class at a university. So if there's any way that you can do that, it's a great help.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Do you work on any other aspects?
So right now, just R2-D2. My husband mostly, he did this as somewhat of a side project. We built one out of Kinex, just the snap together kids toys that we call KN3X. And it's as full scale as it can be, just because of Kinex piece sizes. You can't get quite precise to the blueprints, but it is fully functional. It has arms that move in and out. It drives, it talks, all that kind of stuff. As good engineers, you have to test bed and tinker with stuff first before you move on to the real project. So that was kind of our test bed version before we got to working on the real aluminum R2-D2. And I keep telling my husband we're going to build BB-8 next, and he rolls his eyes. But I'm hoping at some point. And a friend of mine really wants to build Chopper because she cosplays as Hera. So I'm going to hopefully help her build Chopper from the Star Wars Rebels cartoons as well.
Do you see a future with solar thermal on Mars since you found water and family to service?
I would really love to see, you know, humans make it to Mars, and we know the resources are there. And we're actually going to send on the next Mars rover, it doesn't have a formal name yet, we're just calling it Mars 2020 for now. It actually is having a sample caching system on it with the hope of returning it on the next mission. So then we'll be able to really understand with our high-powered instruments here on Earth what actually is in the soil. Did it have life in the past, and could it sustain life now? So we're getting there. We're inching towards answering the questions and getting prepared for humans on Mars. That rover also has an instrument on it that's actually going to be a technology demo. The Martian atmosphere is mostly carbon dioxide, and so it's an instrument that will hopefully convert that carbon dioxide into oxygen that humans can breathe. So they're sending a test unit now of will that technology actually work there to prepare. Yeah. Yep. So we're starting to inch towards preparing for humans on Mars. Yeah.
So earlier you talked about how you test things before you send them to Mars. Like, what methods do you use to test them while you're on Earth to like mimic the effects of Mars that could happen?
So a lot of instruments are put into vacuum chambers where we can make it simulate the Martian atmosphere. We also can do full vacuum tests. We also do a lot of vibration testing. The launches themselves to get the spacecraft out of Earth and on their way are very intense. They're very loud. They're different thermal environments than what you would have on Mars. Mars is very cold, whereas if it's sitting on top of a rocket, either, you know, Vandenberg Air Force Base here or Cape Canaveral, you know, Cape Canaveral's pretty muggy and occasionally has hurricanes and that sort of thing. So you kind of have to make it for all sorts of environments or figure out how to protect it beforehand. And so a lot of what they do is vibrational testing for the actual rocket launch, thermal testing. You know, it'll also be in space where it'll experience huge temperature swings before heading to Mars. So we try and do as much of that as well. There's also radiation testing because you're in space outside of our magnetic field, and so you're not protected in that way either. So there's a lot of different types of testing that they do, and sometimes they'll do it at like the component level, sometimes they'll do it at the instrument level, and then they'll also do it again once the whole spacecraft is built together and assembled. There's some really huge chambers at different NASA centers that can test various things.
Any questions?
Yes.
Yes.
I visited JPL a few years ago with a class. It was in a sterile room, and whoever was going in was wearing some kind of suit completely.
Yeah.
So, can you explain?
Yeah. So those are just models. Those aren't the real ones.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, I would not do that to the real one. Yeah, they wouldn't let me near it. I actually have not even gone into one of the clean rooms at JPL or at any NASA facility since I work in the operations. I work on it once it's actually gone into space. So I only get to see it from the viewing gallery, just like the rest of the public.
Go ahead.
Yeah, where do you see the solar panel technology
for the next decade or so?
I think it's just going to get better and better. So the Dawn spacecraft I work on, it was actually the largest spacecraft launched at the time, because we were going out to the asteroid belt, so you need even bigger solar panels. And we got beat by the Juno spacecraft, which was using solar panels at Jupiter, so you need even more and bigger. And they're also more efficient. And so as they get more efficient and more compact, I think we're going to see more solar-powered missions going to the outer planets. Because at least up until very recently, Jupiter and beyond, you had to have the radioactive isotope thermal generators, which is basically radioactive decay generating heat, which they convert into power. That was pretty much the only way that you could send a mission to the outer planets. And now we're starting to see that technology get better. So I'm hoping as the technology increases, we can see more missions enabled to go to the outer planets. Because it's kind of hard to get nuclear material, and it's a lot cheaper to get solar panels. So I'm really hoping to see that field expand.
Do you use AR or VR technology?
Yeah, so that's actually a very interesting field of development right now, using AR and VR technology. There's one program with the Microsoft HoloLens where they're trying to enable the different scientists on Curiosity and then future missions to actually be able to all converge into like a 3D model of the current terrain on Mars, so they can discuss what rocks they want to go explore in real time, instead of sending around images where you've circled something in Photoshop or something like that. All the scientists can kind of converge together and discuss the plan for the day in real time. So there's a lot of discussion about other future applications like that to make it easier for collaboration across universities and the whole world.
Do you think that converting the oxygen on Mars, the carbon dioxide on Mars into oxygen would make the planet even colder?
So at least at the scale we're doing it, and even for future humans, at least for now, it wouldn't have enough of an impact. But in the future, that could potentially be an issue. But at that point, I think humans would also be generating more atmosphere, so it may kind of be a wash. And Martian dust also, as humans are around, maybe more Martian dust gets kicked off, which would also have a bit of a climate impact as well. But it's certainly something to think about, all these balances that you would have.
Do you create your own solar panels, or do you go to a company?
I don't know. I wasn't there for the building part of any of the spacecraft, but I know that a lot of spacecraft actually do get built for other facilities and instruments built at universities that then integrate. NASA spacecraft isn't necessarily all built by NASA. I know that several of the instruments on the spacecraft I work on did not come from NASA. The Dawn mission, none of the instruments were NASA instruments. One was from the Los Alamos laboratory, and then the other ones were from Italy and Germany. So there's a lot of international collaboration as well. But maybe we built the spacecraft bus and then put all the instruments on there and that sort of thing. So, yeah. Yeah, so JPL has a lot of internship programs from high schoolers, college students, grad students, that sort of thing. This is about the time of year where we start hiring for the summer. So if you're interested, I would definitely go check out our JPL website and look for internship opportunities. We do offer internships all year round. So if you're at a local university and want to work for a semester, we also have those sorts of opportunities as well. And they can be in anything from coding to building parts to, I think the art department offers some, maybe library help as well, kind of all over the place. You just kind of apply with a resume and they'll find a good match for you.
And are those on the weekends or is it a summer?
It depends on what you're going into, but the summer ones, they would expect you to be there Monday through Friday, and they typically have fun events on the weekends as well. There's a whole bunch of aerospace companies in LA, so I know every summer they have the LA Aerospace Games where they take over, I think, Dockweiler Beach, and every company has a team, and then they compete in like intramural kind of events. So there's a pretty good community among all the internships everywhere as well.
Yes.
I was interested in inviting my nephew over. He's actually a physics major. Mm-hmm. What kind of opportunities are there? Because I know right now he's also looking for other opportunities now that he's obtained his bachelor's of science.
Yeah.
And what kind of opportunities are there to offer for physics aspect of GEQ?
Yeah, so physics is super applicable just about anywhere because it's kind of a basis for engineering, basis for math, basis for science, so it's super flexible. And JPL is hiring like crazy right now. We have so many spacecraft missions that are in development. We're desperately hiring people to come up with the latest and greatest ways to do these missions. So if he's got a resume, I would say take a look at JPL's website and apply. Yeah.
So your career is very collaborative from what we see on the pictures and what you talk about. How do you keep your relationships strong? Also, is networking important in science?
Yeah, so I would say networking is definitely important, especially even though my particular area is very heavily gender balanced, it's still positive to have that network of positive people around you to help encourage. You know, I'm definitely suffering occasionally from imposter syndrome as others, so we kind of help lift each other up. And I found that to be a really important aspect of being there. And also just networking, not only within JPL, but across, you know, different universities. And that's part of why I'm so active online, is I find lots of interesting opportunities that way. Last year, my husband had to go to Barcelona for work, and I said, well, I'll tag along. And while he was working, I was giving talks at different universities with people I found through Twitter. And so I found that to be particularly interesting as well, building that network of people that you wouldn't necessarily have met otherwise. So, and then I guess even in college, my advisor was very helpful and he would take me along to operate all these different spacecraft missions. But I found it very useful just to go to different science conferences and that sort of thing and introduce myself. The worst thing that's going to happen is someone's going to like ignore you or not talk to you, or, you know, if you're interested in something, send them an email. And once again, the worst thing they're going to do is not respond. So I know it's somewhat hard to reach out sometimes and have that confidence to be able to reach out. But I found most people are really interested in what they're doing, and they're more than happy to talk to someone that's actually interested as well.
Never hurts to try.
Yep, exactly.
So no matter what age you are. So one of the questions I like to ask is this a good feel for both extroverts and introverts?
I definitely know a lot of introverts and a lot of extroverts. You can definitely, if you are an introvert and you just want to work in your corner and work on one particular aspect, that's totally fine. In spacecraft operations, though, you pretty much have to be an extrovert because you're negotiating. I'm kind of the interface between the scientists and the engineers. The scientists will come and say, we need this type of data, you know, images at this time of day, at this lighting angle to do our science. And the engineer is like, you want to do what with my spacecraft? And so I kind of have to be the boundary in between and the translator between them and help them understand on both sides, why is it important to do this particular observation, or maybe we could slightly change it and be able to work with the engineer's guidelines, that sort of thing. So I found that to be kind of fun, and so we're all kind of extroverted, which we also like to give talks like this because we're so used to translating between the scientists and the engineers, it's somewhat easy to then translate to the public. And so we're also kind of extroverted, giving lots of talks. If you should show up to like local Comic Cons, we're always usually there giving talks about our missions as well. So, yeah.
Any questions?
Do you build Earthship dome homes on any of the planets?
No. Right now, we're just sending our little robot explorers to kind of scout things out. You know, there's definitely lots of talk of what future habitats would look like on different planets. And so, you know, domes, or will we go underground into the lava tubes to also give us some radiation protection, that sort of thing. So that's also a field of discussion I know is going on right now, is how would we actually design the habitats for humans on different planets?
So it sounds like your days are very different, and usually my question is, what does a day look like for you? But what does a week look like for you?
Yeah. So it pretty much looks like you would think of any normal office job. I sit in my cubicle writing emails, making PowerPoint slides, working in spreadsheets, all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, you have the cool result of your work then influences the spacecraft exploring our solar system. So at least on a day-to-day basis, most of it just looks kind of like any other day job. It's just the subject that it's about is pretty cool.
Okay, excellent. Can you talk a little bit about, I sensed a lot of interest about the R2-D2 club.
Yeah.
And how do people get into that? Like, can, does someone need to know how to build them, or is there different things they can be doing to help?
Yeah, so there's a whole club of builders. Our main website, international forum, is called astromech.net. And there we have blueprints, and people can make them out of whatever they're interested in. So I built mine out of mostly aluminum, with some resin, some 3D printed parts. Some people build them out of styrene, which is just kind of sheets of plastic that then you cut and glue together. People have 3D printed ones. It's kind of whatever material and form you look comfortable with. There's also one I know that was built entirely out of Lego, and I also have the Kinex one as well. So it's fun, and you don't have to build R2-D2. You don't have to go the standard blue and white droid. People have invented their own color schemes or picked a droid in the background that has a different head or a different color scheme, and they'll go for as you know those as well. It's just kind of what you're interested in and what drives you to building one. And in particular, the way I got interested was someone I actually met on Twitter. It was like, can I come get a tour of JPL? And I said, yeah, sure. And he said, can I bring my R2-D2? And I was like, what? And he said, yeah, I built my own R2-D2. I'd love to drive it around. And I had to go looking in, you know, our internal rules of like, can people just bring random robots here? Like, it wasn't a weapon. It wasn't the, you know, and I couldn't find anything that explicitly said you couldn't. So I said, why don't you come like right before Halloween so it kind of blends in, you know? And so he came a couple days before Halloween, and pretty much the instant that I saw it, I was like, I want my own. And we drove it all around JPL, and it was really great rolling down the streets because people would come running out of the buildings. And they were like, oh my gosh, R2-D2. And at one point, like one of the cop cars came screaming around the corner, and I'm like, oh, here it is, I'm fired, I'm gonna be, you know, strolled out. And they were like, no, we just saw it on the security cams and we wanted to get pictures with it. And then the same thing happened with a fire truck as he was leaving. So he's quite a hit. You know, a lot of people at JPL are inspired by different, you know, sci-fi, you know, Star Trek, Star Wars, all that kind of stuff. And so getting to see that, and very recently I gave a tour to a friend who has a full C-3PO costume as well. So I brought in my R2-D2 and his C-3PO, and we were walking around, and as you can imagine, that was also quite popular. So it's kind of fun, you know, gives a little bit of a distraction. And, I don't know, it's fun. And, you know, I consider my R2 done, but not complete. So he drives, he lights up, and he makes sound, which is what I consider done. And next, we want to add in all the robotic parts of him, because what's R2 really without like the personality of opening all the panels and all that kind of stuff? So I've got a lot of the hinges installed, but not the motors wired up and that sort of thing. So his arms will move, the panels will move, his head will move, all that stuff. But my husband and I are working on a kitchen remodel right now, so that's kind of taken our mechanical priority over R2-D2. But once that's done, then R2 can continue to be tinkered on.
Any other questions?
Yes. Where do you find the instructions? Is it something you just go to YouTube, how to build a R2-D2? Or?
Yeah, so if you go to astromech.net, there are blueprints, and the forum's very helpful. So if you have a particular issue, it's more than likely someone has run into the same problem before, so there's a lot of how-tos. People will build individual parts. We're not allowed to sell kits because of agreements with Lucasfilm, but you can buy individual parts. So like one person will make the dome, one person will make the set of lights, one person will make the skins that go on the outside, that sort of thing. So you can also buy parts through other people who have access to the machine shops. And like, yes, I have access to JPL's machine shops, but not for personal use like this. So I had to go through other methods.
Another question we've been getting a lot is, love seeing all the women, all the groups of women that work on all the projects. Is there a push for diversity as well? So can you talk a little bit about that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so JPL being a very technical workforce is actually going through a lot of initiatives to try and increase the diversity and inclusion at JPL. We often have talks about all sorts of things like imposter syndrome, unconscious bias, all those sorts of subjects. And there's a lot of training, the mandatory sexual harassment training, all that kind of stuff. And so I found it to be that they're making an effort to make sure that everyone is included and we have a diverse workforce.
Any other questions? We have about 10 minutes.
Yes, sir.
You kind of alluded to that in your talk, but someone who wants to pursue a career in this field and specifically work in NASA or JPL, any kind of such projects, so what kind of a typical work day would they expect, the working hours?
Yeah. So at least at JPL, we work what's called a 980 schedule, so we have every other Friday off, which is pretty nice. Not a lot of places do that, which it's really nice, with, especially with LA traffic. You don't have to commute quite as often. And at least it also kind of depends on what project you're working on. So on the Mars rovers, we'll have what we call shifts, where you have to report by a certain time, and then you are staying there until you are done planning for the day, which can be anywhere from 3 hours if you have a really short plan that you know what you're doing, to anywhere, I think the longest I've been there is about 11 hours, because there was a lot of debate about what we were doing and all that kind of stuff. So I found that particularly is not common at JPL. It's more common to just kind of come in, you know, in the morning between 8 and 9 o'clock and leave 5, 6 o'clock when your 9 hours are done for the day. And, you know, a lot of people can work in the machine shop building the parts or that sort of thing. I found spacecraft operations to kind of be the fun part. You know, I've been called in at 3 in the morning when there's an issue with the spacecraft. And, you know, some people will be like, I don't want a job where I have to think about it outside of work. But, you know, I work on robots during the day and then I work on my R2-D2 at night. Robots is my life. So I found spacecraft operations to be kind of my favorite. It's technical but social. One of the reasons I kind of left the scientific field is I found myself enjoying the work, but socially I wasn't talking to anyone. I was just sitting in a cube by myself writing code or reading papers, and I wasn't having fun. Whereas with spacecraft operations, I'm still reading papers and doing technical work, but I have to talk to people. And so that is why I think I was particularly drawn to that field. And having a science background going into that is useful because a lot of the engineers don't understand the science or vice versa. And so, excuse me, I've got kind of a hybrid look at both worlds. And so typical days, you know, I'll come in, answer emails, work on spreadsheets, that sort of thing. But at least I'm talking to people, and I know the result's pretty cool, because then I can look at my phone later in the day and see the pictures that I took on Mars coming down. So that's pretty fun.
Do you have a favorite book or some author for high schoolers to look into the robotics?
So at least for books, I was always more a fantasy nerd, reading more like Lord of the Rings, that kind of stuff. So I'm like one of the few people that didn't really like science fiction. I think I really only like Star Wars because it's more like wizards in space. So I don't know, particularly for like robotics books, I'm sure there's a lot more out now than there used to be. Guess, yeah. Would you have suggestions?
Yeah. We do have a lovely, these are all available for checkup.
But we can always write up a book list for you if you want to chat afterwards. I can email you a book list.
Yeah.
Any, yes?
What type of coding software do you
So the question she asked was what type of coding software we use. I personally don't do a whole lot of coding, but I know that we use Python, we use, what are other ones people use? I guess technically I do code, but it's special software, old software written for the rovers. When we write a command, it's kind of a line by line. There's not really a lot of like logic. It doesn't really look like a software per se. But any programming language, once you know one, it's pretty easy to hop between them. So it can be pretty useful. I know Python's pretty common these days, but I don't know off the top of my head what other ones people use. I think Pascal is pretty popular. C is pretty popular. but I don't know that I would know others off the top of my head that are being used. But I'm not really connected much to the like software engineering side of JPL, so.
Is there anything else that you think is necessary besides the technical aspect of being a scientist so that you need to be successful, besides being knowledgeable and being being an expert in your subject?
Yeah. So I have found being enthusiastic really helps to really care about your job. Like, there are some people that just, you know, want to check the boxes and go home at the end of the day. But for this, you know, my brain never really shuts off, right? So I would try and find what it is that you find interesting that you don't want to stop doing. And you know, sure, being good at math will help, all that kind of stuff, learning a programming language. But at the end of the day, it's really, can you learn how to do the job and can you do it well? And that requires kind of some self-driven enthusiasm for the work as well. Don't know that I would have any other like real skills, because it just kind of depends on what you're interested in. Like if you're interested in programming, I would try doing some cool programming tasks, that sort of thing. But I think it also kind of takes like a personality type of kind of being self-driven, reading all the time, that sort of stuff.
Do you have a job base where it has like different like career opportunities as far as like the requisites that that they're looking for as far as being able to obtain those certain positions, like as far as like what they're looking for as far as for myself, I prefer when I'm doing a job search, I kind of look at what it is that they're looking for and see if I kind of meet that criteria, kind of start working my way towards that.
So I know at JPL's website, in addition to the, like the job listings, they kind of have general like career paths at JPL that would give an idea of what they're looking for. But I found at least at different NASA facilities, it's not really like what your qualifications are. Because as I mentioned, my boss was in biomedical engineering and now works on robotic arms for spacecraft. And there are lots of people that have very different degrees. One example I'll give is my friend Doug. He used to work in the UK. And he got a degree in multimedia design. And he actually worked for a medical imaging company, and he was very interested in space on the side. So during the day, he would do medical visualization stuff. But at night, he would take the images back from the Mars rovers and process them, make them into the panoramas, into the color images. And then he got noticed by NASA for his work. And when he lost his job in the medical industry, JPL said, well, why don't you come work for us? And now that he has gotten his green card, he actually is commanding the cameras on the Mars rovers now. And that's like my favorite career path story is his story. So just your hobby can lead you to JPL. That's why I don't want to say like, go get a degree in XYZ, because it really takes everyone. It's really more almost a personality type than a like check mark list of things. I mean, it certainly helps if you have a some sort of STEM degree for sure, if you want to work in the more technical side. But I think it just kind of takes that passion and that energy and that drive to really get there.
So, yeah. Did you know you were going to do this since you were like in high school?
Somewhat. So I was always interested in weather, just even as a little kid. My parents said all I ever watched was The Little Mermaid and the Weather Channel. And it wasn't until I gave a talk very recently that a kid said, well, you probably like The Little Mermaid because it had the big storm in it. I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, ooh, a deep intersection there. Okay. And so, I don't know, I just was always kind of drawn to it. And now I actually don't do a whole lot of weather stuff at all. But it kind of started me on the right path to eventually find what I really liked. So if you have something that you've always been interested in, you know, that may not end up being what your career path is. It could be something, you know, kind of related on the side. But just kind of keep finding out more information, what people have done. You know, I have been saying for the last couple weeks since I found out I'm starting rover driver training, of like, who knew a degree in meteorology could, you know, put you behind the driver's seat, right? That's not a common thing. And I've been joking, I'm going to turn into a storm chasing robot, which they haven't really liked. I think in particular at JPL, I've noticed that as long as you can get in the door, you can kind of go wherever you want and find out what's interesting to you. There are people that, you know, I mentioned my friend Doug, but there are lots of other people that have degrees that have nothing to do with what they were doing now, but it's just what they found interesting and they learned and moved on.
That is so true. Mm-hmm. I was a film major. No. Any last questions?
What is your last name?
My last name is Bean.
Bean?
Yes. No relation to Al Bean, the astronaut.
Last question?
Are people able to take tours into different departments outside of the, like, the JPL days? Can you, just as a student, call up and say, I want to tour certain parts of the facility?
Yeah, so JPL does offer general public tours, but I would definitely recommend coming on our open house days. You do have to get tickets in advance, but they are free. I believe the next one coming up is the second weekend of June, but I would double check that online. And you have to get tickets in advance, but we open up a lot more of the lab, the micro devices lab. You can see the clean rooms, mission control, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of the actual engineers, like myself, actually staff the booths. It's not like the public relations folks, although they are there helping out. But at that point, you can actually talk to different people and get an idea of the different career paths that are there at JPL. So I would definitely recommend coming on those days. I know I'll definitely be there.
Exact scoop on when the ticketing opens?
I don't know, unfortunately. I just saw that they posted the dates, which is, I was like, I think it said June 8th and 9th, but I just only saw it this morning, so I don't know for sure. So the reason we offer tickets now is because JPL got so crowded that we were like blocking traffic for miles, and like it was really bad. So now we've offered tickets to more moderate it. My understanding is that the tickets went quicker than Comic-Con tickets do. Wow. So definitely keep an eye. They'll post, you know, the tickets will open up on a certain day and time, and just keep your eye out. And we'll offer them just about every year, I think. I think sometimes we've even done them twice in 1 year. So just keep an eye out, and hopefully you can take a look.
Can a school schedule a visit, or like a small group, mm-hmm. like a robotics club, are they able to?
Yeah, so JPL does offer educational tours. It's if you, I don't remember the link off the top of my head, but if you Google like JPL tours, there will be a couple different options. You can sign up for either the general public tour, or they'll offer slots for educational groups as well. And if there aren't any available, you can always call the education office, and they'll hopefully be able to work something out with particular groups.
Thank you all so much for joining us. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Wonderful.